Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce my guest, Liz Kim, from Genesis Clock Farm in California, which is a little startup farm that focuses on sustainable living, education, and urban farming with aquaponics. So welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here. I feel very humbled.
Well, we're excited to have you, and I just love your passion for aquaponics and gardening and teaching in your community. And so go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I'm an immigrant. I moved to the United States when I was 2 and grew up pretty poor, actually. Grew up in Hawaii. So I was very lucky to grow up in a really great environment. And then my parents moved us to Washington State when I was in high school, and basically graduated from the University of Washington and then moved to California when I was about not quite 19. I think I was 2 months shy of my 19th birthday, and I moved to California to be near my parents who were living here at the time, and I've never left. I love California.
Okay. And then I always kind of like to start the show by asking people about their very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, you know, I was really lucky to grow up in Hawaii when it was kind of still pristine. So walking, you know, to school, you would walk by at least like 5 star fruit trees, a few mango trees, banana trees, sugar canes that were just kind of growing in the wild. And we were able to just kind of, we just identified them. We knew what we could eat, what was great to, you know, fun to do, because there were certain flowers you could suck the nectar out of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were more, I think.
Sorry, listeners, we got disconnected here, so I'm just going to restart it where it gets reconnected.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. I think it'll take a lot longer than my generation, but that's not the point. You know, the point is we are running out of resources, and we have to get smarter. And it's not just a matter of being smarter. It makes business sense, too. You know, you're saving a lot of money if you're going to be more renewable. Using limited resources is just only going to get more expensive the more limited it is. It's supply and demand. And so we're going to go renewable. We have to. We don't have a choice. And when businesses start realizing, and they have, that they're going to save a lot of money, you know, sometimes in the $100,000, you know, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. We're all going to do it. We have to do it.
I like to think that way. I hope we're going to do it in time, and that and people and corporations are going to follow, and people need to, you know, force them to. They need to say, you know, we demand this as consumers, because ultimately it's where the dollars are spent. That's what's going to make the biggest change.
I have to say that we live in a very exciting time. It's a really weird, scary, exciting time. We realize we're running out of resources. Where the scientists are not putting years of numbers on it. They used to never do that. They used to never say, oh, we have 50 years of water left. You know, now they're saying stuff like that. And it's like, really? That used to be in movies. and it's not, you know, and it's just unreal. It's unreal.
And you're right in California, and they're saying that California only has, like, what, 1 year of drinking water left? Is that what they're really saying?
There's a big, you know, California's drought has caused such a big ripple effect, because California and Florida are the two states that provide vegetables and fruit and nuts. It's a $1 trillion industry out of California. If we don't do well, then the U.S.'s GDP goes down, California's GDP goes down, you know, all this stuff. Economically, it would be a nightmare. And so that's what it's turning out to be. With the drought, it's turning out to be a really political big nightmare, because it's going to affect how much money we make. And it's kind of a good thing, kind of a bad thing. The good thing is they have to get smarter about how they use their limited resources. We can't go on the assumption that it's endless anymore. It's a rude awakening, but we needed it. It's kind of a slap in the face, but we needed it. You know, we mm-hmm. some of us knew it was coming way a long time ago, and we were called crazy. Mm-hmm. But come on, you know, if the Earth is covered in 97 or 94%, you know, the numbers vary of salt water, which is undrinkable, mm-hmm. and then the rest of it is drinkable, and then of that 0.036% is drinkable. How much water is that really? Not very much. And that's the frightening aspect of it. And then now with California in a drought and parts of Florida in a drought. And believe it or not, Florida just joined the state of Missouri saying that there is no such thing as climate change. So when you have, you know, societies who don't believe in climate change or global warming, and there's a drought where food comes from, it's a huge impact. It's deep. It goes really deep. It goes in. If you mess with people, there's certain things that go by in life. You know, there's three rules you don't mess with. You don't mess with people's money, you don't mess with their children, and you don't mess with their food. Like, that's really, when it boils down to it, you don't come. Those are the three things you don't mess on people with. And so in a way, it's food is really, really important. So this drought is that's what it's about. And that's why I like aquaponic farming.
Yeah, we're
using
go ahead
so much less.
Tell us
yeah,
about
we're losing. Well, yeah, and that's what turned me on to it. You know, first of all, I was spending probably a tremendous amount of time in my garden gardening on the weekends, every day after work when I was working. And everybody in California kind of does this. We all grow our tomatoes. We're all proud about how big our tomatoes can be, or eggplants or cucumbers. And so we're pretty ag friendly here, even in the urban areas. But where we're not ag friendly is we love Miracle-Gro. We love Roundup. We love our front yards. We love lawns. That kind of stuff, we don't have that luxury anymore. We just don't. We can't, you know, and there are alternatives that are just as beautiful, if not more. And so to me, it's like, you know, we have grass, we don't water it, it stays green. It's deep rooted and we don't clip it short. And, you know, when we clip it, we leave the lawn clippings where they drop and it helps mulch and keeps the moisture down. You don't have to lose everything is what we're saying. You don't, it's not a big effort. As a matter of fact, you know what, it saves your gardener or yourself a lot of time to not have to pick up and rake that those leaves.
And one more interruption. Sorry, listeners. Technical problems.
In my aquaponic units, at a faster rate, using less water, using all natural things that happen in nature. And we do the same thing that farmers do in soil. But we do it differently, in the sense that farmers, when they farm in soil, the plant actually has to work a lot harder for its roots to go in and find food, to find nutrients. Mm-hmm. In aquaponics and in hydroponics, we deliver that food system up to the plant. So the energy of that plant is more up above the root than the root itself. And so that's the gist of aquaponics and hydroponics. Now, the main difference between hydroponics and aquaponics is that in aquaponics, we add aquaculture, we add fish, and fish provide the ammonia, which provides then the nitrites, then the nitrates to feed as fertilizer to the plants, and it's served up to them constantly, depending on how your system is plumbed, modeled, what type of system you have. You can have many different types, and it's using hydroponic technology, which is fantastic technology. And hydroponics grows food just as fast. The difference is, you know, we're not adding chemicals. So hydroponics can become more expensive because you're having to buy chemicals. Now, your plant doesn't care really where your chemicals are coming from. Your plant's going to grow great whether you're providing petrochemicals or whatever other kind of chemicals. All it is to them, when they break down, they eat it as food. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the main difference between I see it as in aquaponics and hydroponics is that we don't have to go through the added expense of having to buy fertilizers.
Because it's coming from the fish, right?
Because it's coming from the fish. Exactly. It's coming from the fish. It's what nature does. You know, the hydroponic people, you know, say, well, you know, you guys have a harder time. And some might, and some may have a harder time, you know, adjusting the pH without chemicals, you know. We haven't had that problem. We've had a constant 6.8 pH range in our water. We test it 3 times a day. Our nitrate levels are kind of high, which is what they call, you know, an opportunity to add another bed so that we can, you know, grow more. But we're getting ready to shut our systems down. But we've shown that we can grow outdoor passively really well with high-end produce that we can supply so fast, you know.
Explain what that means, that you can grow up passively, in case the audience is wondering. And I'm kind of curious what that, I mean.
Oh, okay.
That it means what I think
we
it does.
Didn't use, like, we didn't use, sun? We used, yes, we used no for supplemental heat? Lighting or heat at all.
Okay.
What we did was we built, it was just basically out in the open. And we encountered pest problems, and we, you know, dealt with those with water. We just used the hose and our fingers, and we just did that. Mm-hmm. We cleaned the filters and the side of the house, and we, you know, when we moved in, the soil here was like concrete. It was really hard pan, and the good news was there were things growing in it, like clover.
Oh.
So it was good. It was not bad, but it was like. It was really dry, and you had to use kind of a pickaxe to kind of get it to come apart. And what we decided to do, instead of sitting there and fighting it, we decided to, you know, get some chickens and let them dig it up and poop on it for a while. And then whenever we cleaned our filters from our fish tanks, you know, our swirl tank or whatever, we just dumped the water out into the soil. We just dumped it. We just didn't, you know, think about it. And we're studying aquaponics. We're studying the microbiology of it. And we thought, it can't hurt. Mm-hmm. It's fish poop, for God's sakes, and chicken poop, for God, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it worked. I was able to grow and continue to grow, and now they're in bolt. I'm letting them bolt. I'm letting everything bolt so I can just kind of see what happens. And what's happening is I've got lettuce growing in the weirdest places.
I've got
radishes growing in the strangest places, along with a lot of beneficial plant flowers that are really quite beautiful.
And it's so, just coming up on its own, the lettuce and the radishes?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything. Yeah, so basically, you know, what it's done, I got to tell you, it was really funny because we had a few woofers here, and I said, you know what, we're not going to weed. And they're like, what? And I said, yep, we're just going to watch it grow. And we're just going to help it out a little bit in the beginning, but we're going to put – so we put some rock dust down. Mm-hmm. We put some worm casings down that we've got a couple of worm farms. We let the chickens do their work and eat the worms and eat, you know, things, bugs. And then we just kept putting fish poop into the soil wherever we could, whenever we could. And then we started plant, you know, yeah.
And you did that by like just using the overflow water or like by cleaning the water, like you didn't have to like scoop it out or anything.
We have a hard water filtration system. So like the fish food and the fish waste that doesn't get broken down all the way. We kind of pump it out in 5 gallon buckets, and it's about 5 gallons probably every week and a half. It'd be every about 7 to 9 days.
Not as much, seven,
more like 9 days to 11 days, I would say. I was going to say 7 days, but that's when we might do that because we notice like the plants. I have a lot of plants in pots, actually. I do a lot of container gardening. And the reason I do that, I'll tell you that in a second, is we use a filters to feed a lot of the pots in the container garden. And in the container gardening, I grow a lot of like onions and chives. And then you know what I do? I kind of throw it into the garden where I have a lot of pests.
Oh.
And it kind of confuses them and it discourages them. And it's my natural way of not messing too much with the environment. You know what I mean? But me kind of helping it a little bit by just confusing anything that's attacking, like maybe the radishes, I'll throw some green onions in.
Now, when you say you throw some green onions in,
I have them in pots.
And so you just put them kind of next to that bed or something?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Right where they're growing, I'll just throw it right next. I'll throw the container in front of the radishes, and then all of a sudden the bugs will stop eating the radishes. I just kind of, you know, and you know, not
That's like
all,
taking companion planting to a whole nother level.
Yeah, you know, I'm just kind of doing it like, and I just move them around, and it seems to kind of work. It seems to freak them out, and then I can move them around again, where if I see more buggage somewhere else, and I just kind of move them around.
So they don't like the onions, huh?
They don't like the onions. They don't like cilantro. They don't like a lot of the herb species. And so, you know, I grow a lot of herbs in containers. And then I throw them around. I call it throwing it around. I gently place them in my garden where I see some buggage until I start seeing some maybe ladybugs or some predatory bugs that are beneficial. And then I move the onions out and let them just kind of grow back and see what happens.
Excellent. I think listeners are going to love those tips, and they're going to want to try that in their garden.
I just do it for fun, and it makes the garden look pretty, and I change it around, and I have them in pretty containers, and, you know, I don't necessarily.
Because herbs, you know, they smell so good, you know, they're letting off all those pretty aromas.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to spread them around, and then they're always so pretty and dainty, and they always
have people, you know, and some people
flowers.
Hate them, you know. People hate them, like I grow a lot of mint. And mint are very anti-bug. I mean, bugs don't like mint that much. And I grow a lot of mint. And in between mint, I grow a lot of radishes. They grow really well together, actually.
Nice.
The radishes, you know, and you can tell the radishes, you know, apart from the leaves, very easily. Their leaves are broader and bigger. I have daikon in there. And, you know, they just kind of grow. And I don't harvest everything. I just harvest what I need. Like, if I need a radish, I'm like, okay, you know, I tell my daughter, go get me a radish. And we chop it up, put it in a night salad. And we do the same with the lettuce. You know, we only harvest what we need. And so, you know, we eat sustainably. We show other people how we eat, and you know, I'd rather, instead of chopping the whole head off of a lettuce for my family, obviously if we go commercial, it's different. I'd rather just pick a few of really fresh, big, huge leaves and chop them into my salad. And I have leaves that are fresh lettuce that's been only picked an hour ago or less, you know? And chives and everything that way, just eating out of my garden on a daily basis. But, you know, eating out of my aquaponic garden is really fabulous because I get to choose what I'm going to eat in less than 3 weeks.
In less than 3 weeks?
Yeah, in about 3 weeks, I can pretty much grow just about anything. Three to four weeks. No.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty fast. Yeah, like tomatoes would take me a little bit longer. I think tomatoes would take me about 2 months. Mm-hmm. And that's from, you know, from seed germination.
So like 60 days to get a tomato?
Yeah, in aquaponics, you can do that. You can really manipulate it. You just need heat and light.
Oh. Okay.
So, you know, it grows a lot faster. You get a much bigger yield. Like, I would give you an example.
Okay.
And we do this a lot. We do this for fun, and we can do this because we're not commercial yet. And so what we've been doing with our two units is we've been playing. So what we typically do is we will plant in a deep raft system. We'll plant into our media bed. We'll plant in soil. We'll plant in hydroton in a cup. And then we test the results, and then we do a daily testing of our nitrates and our nitrites and our ammonia and our pH, and we see which grows the fastest. So far, our DWC seems to overtake everything on lettuces. I can do
now,
basil
wait,
in them.
What's DWC stand for? Is that
deep water culture?
The deep water culture. Okay.
Yeah, there
and
are these rafts.
The other thing you mentioned, was it hydroton or?
Hydroton is a type of media that we use it around, and it's great for germinating.
Okay.
But we can also use – there's tons of media out there that you can use. There's just tons. You just have to be careful that there's no lime or anything that'll throw off, or acid, or make it alkaline that'll throw off the pH in your system. It has to be very neutral.
Okay.
So, you know, basically, you know,
when so you're running like four different test plots all at once of the same exact
all
seeds.
The time. Yeah.
Oh, we how are, fun! And we have you're a like lot little of scientists. Fun.
You know, what's funny is when we first started doing this, we had no reason. We would say, okay, you know, this works, but we wouldn't know why. So we started asking questions.
No, good.
And the more questions we started asking, the more books we had to read. The more books we had to read, the more scientific we got. And the more scientific we got, it was really it's really fun. I wish biology was this fun in high school.
Right.
But we basically do what people
or
do
if
in
they would
soil.
Teach botany in high school. I always liked the botany classes when I got to college.
You know, it's the truth. You know, I do too. I love plants. I love plants, and that's what really I dig plants. And so, basically, you know, what farmers will do in soil, will you'll see them in the beginning of every season. They will throw or spray a type of ammonia. It's a chemical, but it's basically it's ammonia into the soil. And what that ammonia does is it attracts bacteria. And it smells. And then eventually that smell goes away because it's eaten by other bacteria. And eventually it produces a microcosm of all this microzoa and bacteria in the soil. And that's what makes the soil come to life. And then you have earthworms and you have all these things. Well, we're doing the same thing, you know, creating fertilizer, but through fish poop. So instead of the whole process in soil, which takes a lot longer, and the roots have to grow and search out that food source, we can provide it in an aquaponic unit through just the fish excretion. And so, you know, we test our stuff, and we notice that a head of lettuce, whether it be butter crunch or red leaf or spinach or basil or Malabar or tomatoes, or I'm trying to think of all the things that we've tried, peas, beans, our deep water system seems to produce the most, the fastest. Okay. Our other media bed, which has hesponics in it, our indoor media bed grows anything that's I can throw seed down, and in about, I would say, 2 weeks, I can empty it out. I can just flush it all, the whole system. I take every plant out of there, mm-hmm. have just my media. I can throw seed down, and I would say in about 2 weeks, it's completely green.
Wow. Now, I'm picturing like an aquarium that's got like, you know, the gravel rocks on the bottom. Does your deep media, is that totally different? Are there rocks
it's
in the
completely,
bottom?
There's no rocks at the bottom
of
my fish tank.
On like
it's
the
just
of
water, and it's really clean, and you can see right through to the bottom. It's an it's a
or
large
is it glass?
There are two large. I have two large IBC tanks full of fish and water, and
okay,
each one holds.
I've been wanting to ask you what kind of fish, but see, go on. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I have goldfish and I have tilapia indoors, and I have rainbow trout outdoors. So I have two different types of units. I have a ebb and flow outdoor unit with just passive sunlight outdoors.
Okay.
And then I have an indoor unit with supplemental lighting, heating, totally a controlled environment, greenhouse.
You were saying there's two beds indoors?
I have three beds indoors and I have three beds outdoors.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I have four beds outdoors. I have four media beds outdoors and I have three beds indoors, two of which are DWC.
Okay, and then describe the DWC beds again. Sorry, that's where I interrupt you. I didn't mean to.
That's all right. They're basically they're 6 by 14 inches. They're 6 feet long, and they're 14 inches tall, and they're about 3 feet wide. And in a commercial system, you would see these along a huge assembly row. they'd come at you. It would be just one long, you know, rows and rows and rows of these systems. And they'd be on, there'd be these rafts. And on these rafts would be your produce. And that's where you get, you know, you can go to a hydroponic, you know, when you get a hydroponic head of lettuce or an aquaponic head of lettuce, you know, you get that clean white root along with your lettuce when you buy it at the grocery store.
Oh, uh-huh.
That's because it was grown in that type of system, in that type of system where it's, the roots are in water. Okay, so that's what you're buying when you buy a head of lettuce with roots on it. You're buying it from either a hydroponic or an aquaponic farmer.
Okay.
And that's why you get the roots, and the roots are. Now, if you got it from a soil farmer, you can't fit that root system into a box. Uh-huh. The roots would be huge.
Oh.
Because that plant has had to go work through the soil,
right.
And uh-huh. You know, and go find its nutrition, and soil retains only like it can't even retain 80% of water once you water it. Whereas our system, in a hydroponic and an aquaponic system, the water is constantly recirculating. And then in the difference between a hydroponic and an aquaponic system is we don't ever flush our water, meaning we don't ever. Unless there's a huge emergency and we have an outbreak of something that's really bad. And I'll explain to you a different reason why we don't do that. We empty out our system. We don't empty out our system. We don't empty out any parts of our system. Our whole system is set up kind of like Legos, so that if one bed becomes corrupted by disease or a virus, we can unplug it immediately.
And
plug it up, take mm-hmm. it out. And just worry about that one bed.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Cool. So that's...
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So, you know, we can easily contain, you know, what's being infected. And we've had that. we've had so much fun.
Well, every garden gets, it's, you know, something.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and it's funny because, you know, with this, it was really neat because we were able to do a lot of different things and play around with it a lot. And we didn't feel like we were sacrificing because we were learning so much. And the byproduct of that was we brought back this backyard into this beautiful oasis. It's gorgeous. And it's teeming with life, and it's beautiful. It's just beautiful out here.
I think the thing that fascinates me the most is the way it's called aquaponics. So you think it's going to take this huge amount of water, but it's actually the complete opposite, right? Like you're replenishing
your
backyard
dump our water.
With like this tiny amount of water, right?
Oh, yeah. So basically we're giving – every time we water our plants, we're mm-hmm. giving – you know, which is like when we clean our filters about once every 9 days, they're getting fish emulsion is what they're getting. They're getting the most rich fertilizer you can buy. Mm-hmm. and it's fresh, and it's really good. It's got microbes. It's alive. It's got stuff in it. It's going to compost in there, and then it's going to attract more bacteria. It's going to attract worms. It's going to make it really, really rich. It's going to bring the soil back.
And then you get to eat the fish besides, right?
Yeah,
which is a bonus
to eat the fish. Oh my god! And so have our animals.
Because fish is one of maybe not in California, but like here in Montana, you know, fish is so expensive. I mean, you can catch if you catch your own wild fish in the rivers, the lakes, or the streams. But if you go to the store to try to buy fish, it's just outrageous.
Yeah, well, you know
especially
that 98%
quality fish.
Yeah, 98% of fish, believe it or not, even in California, are not freshly caught. They're actually farmed.
Right, and they come from like Thailand and Vietnam and places, and it's just destroying their livelihoods, their waters.
Yeah,
the farm fishing. I mean, my husband's like, you're not buying shrimp anymore, and that used to be one of his favorite foods, but. He saw a documentary on the farmers in...
Isn't that disgusting?
And it was just really sad.
But that's, you know, that's about making money. But you can do it yourself. You know, if you have a DWC, a deep water raft system, a DWC, deep water culture system, you can have shrimp in there. You can raise shrimp. And shrimp's actually really healthy for the roots of the plants. They eat the yucky stuff that attracts. The roots attract this really bad bug And those little shrimp, they eat that.
What about lobsters?
Yeah, actually, they do have a freshwater lobster that do well. Wow. And you have to learn their culture and what they're about. You know, they're territorial. So if you put so many in there, they're going to fight. They mate, they reproduce. You're going to want to know what their reproductive cycle is. You know, you might want to reproduce them. You don't want to have to buy them every single time. You know, I mean, there's just so much involved in that. And, you know, you just want to give it some thought and study it. But, hey, of course you can do it. There's no one who can't. I mean, don't you know, that's the one thing about this. It's so new, you know. People have been doing it for 15 years, and then they say, oh, I've never seen that before. And somebody's been doing it for 6 months, and I'm like, oh, my God, let me show you what we did to fix that. You just don't know. And no one can say, you know, what's normal in aquaponics. People are going to say, oh, this is how we do it. That's, you know. People run their systems. Everybody does it differently. Each system is engineered differently, wired differently. There's improvements, and there's going to be. There has to be. Mm-hmm. This is just the beginning of it.
That's what I was thinking. You guys are like the pioneers.
Yeah, you know, it feels weird. And you know what? The pioneers kind of makes me feel sad because the pioneers always did all the mistakes. They always suffered the most. And they were always seen as like the most weirdest people, right? And I'm like, is that how we're seen?
I don't know. I look at it like as being like a scientist, like on the cutting edge. Like you're out there, you know, or even in the Wild West out here in Montana, you know, we always look at the people who came first were, you know, the real explorers. And
yeah, the extremists, right? I mean, yeah, I don't know. Well, I want to say we're happy now. I want to say I'm a happy medium because I must tell you, when we first started this and I read about it, I wasn't quite sure. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't convinced. And I had, believe it or not, I was so skeptical. It took me probably 5 rotations within a year in our indoor unit. I rotated crops 5 times. I mean, I got produce out of it. I ate it. And then it was time to rotate again. And I just did it. I got beans, and then I did peas, and then I did tomatoes, and then I just kept rotating.
All in the same bed, you mean?
All in the same bed.
And now what do you do?
Right now, what I have in it is I just threw down whatever I wanted, and I wanted to see how, you know, the lighting, and I wanted to see what issues I would come up with and how much I can really crowd the system, just out of curiosity.
No, it sounds like they can get pretty crowded, right? You can put quite a few plants in each bed.
Yeah, it does. So what we decided to do is we decided to grow chard and zucchini and cucumber. I mean, these are plants that don't really grow together, right? Uh-huh. And some Malabar spinach just for fun, and some red kale. And it exploded. And then it became a fight of the sun, you know, fighting for light.
Now, when it exploded, you mean like they just grew like crazy. You don't mean like they blew
it
up,
yeah,
right?
It covered the whole indoor greenhouse. I mean, we were like it became
like
it
with
became
giant leaves of squash vines going down the
nuts.
Sides and the cucumber
you
vines.
You have no idea. It covered the whole greenhouse. It was like a jungle. Awesome. I didn't want to go out there anymore. It was like, okay, what's going to be out there? It's going to be a monster in there.
It's like the Rocky Horror, right?
And then in my BWCs, you know, I've not been really good at keeping up with the lettuce either because they're growing faster than we're eating them. So they've got these monster heads of lettuce looking at me like you need to do something. So I've been kind of ignoring them. I've been going through the side door and going outside and looking in the backyard without going through the greenhouse because I know I got to harvest. And I think I told Marabou this. I hate harvesting.
I do remember you saying that.
I it means I have to take my scissors out and I have to go up there and I have to, you know, and I've been doing a lot of it so much lately that I don't want to do it anymore. I'm kind of looking forward to going back to germinating again. I like that germinating process a lot. And Jason, lucky me, Jason loves harvesting. So he goes out there and he's like, look what we got, babe. And I laugh because I'm like, I know. Thank you. I was just wondering when you were going to do that. I know. Isn't that terrible? Don't tell him I said that. Wait a minute. This is going to be podcasted, right? Oh, no, he's going to hear this. Yeah. So we've got like basically we right now we're trying to slow things down. I'm not germinating as much anymore. So, you know, it's kind of sad for me. I'm catching up on a lot of reading. Uh-huh. And gearing up for our next adventure. And I think that's what life is. Life is an adventure. And it's just a combination or a series of experiences. And the next thing we want to do is we want to try going commercial for fun. Which sounds crazy. But you know what? This would be our second career for Jason and I. And uh-huh. We did our first career. We're great at it. We liked it. It was fun. And we're doing it again. And we've got a second career. And it's fun. And we love it.
Now.
And it's fascinating.
Do you want to tell us a little more about what your new adventure is going to be? Or is it a surprise?
Oh, no. No. It's not a surprise. It's, you know, it's we want to go aquaponically. We want to go commercial. We're going to build a greenhouse. And we know it's going to be a lot of hard work, and we're looking forward to it. It's the next challenge, and we want to go commercial, and we want to face the challenges that commercial growers have, and you know, find the market, and do everything a startup company has to do in order to get going. And we know it's going to be a lot of hard work, but we're kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, I like hard work. I always think, you know, I'd always be busy and working hard and keep my days and activities, you know, full.
Doing things that you're really interested in, that really keeps your mind going. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's done for us, you know, like in the middle of the night I woke up, I think about, you know, and I'm like, oh, I know why that's happening.
Right.
You run
exactly.
out into the back and you start working on it, you know. And I used to do this so often that now everybody's so used to it. They don't think twice that I got up at 2 a.m. And I actually, you're going to think I'm really funny, is Jason bought me a beanie and it's got it's like a miner's lamp uh-huh. in the front.
Oh, cute.
Because he's so used to me doing this now. He doesn't want me falling down in the dark. So it's on my bedside table, and I put it on, and I turn on the light, and I light.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I got a beanie with this light on my forehead, and I can see everywhere I'm going and everything I'm doing in the middle of the night, and that's what I've been doing. And I just run out there, and I'm looking at the stuff at night, because all this incredible stuff happens at nighttime too. So, you know, It's knowing your plant. It's knowing your fish. So when you're starting out on aquaponics, you're basically – we're doing the same thing that soil farmers do. You know, they throw that ammonia out there. It attracts all the mycorrhizae, all the bacteria. It attracts the nitrites. It attracts the nitrates. The nitrates, it's what feeds your plants. So what we're doing is we're feeding our plants, you know, through fish waste, we're feeding our plants the nitrates that as much as they want, as much as they need constantly. And so they get to grow up instead of worrying about growing down. And that's how basically that's what aquaponics works in a nutshell. It gets a little bit more complicated than that. But, you know, that's what aquaponics is basically about. It's a different way of growing. But the growing part is all the same, you know. People worry about, oh, you know, there's worms in your food. Well, you know, there's worms in soil. I hate to tell you, there's bugs in soil, you know. You know, I mean, it's amazing to me. People say things like, oh, you know, we're just so worried about the E. coli poisoning with the worms. And, you know, all this is like, you know, smart farmers don't. Yeah. Smart farmers or smart, you know, gardeners, they don't poison themselves. We don't go out eating mushrooms. Well, certain people do. And I feel like, you know, okay, you know, you knew the risks when you did that. It's like, you know, it's on the news every year. People die from mushroom poisoning. You know that there's certain things you don't do. And you know what? We have the World Wide Web. Why wouldn't you go and look it up?
Right.
I mean, you know, use common sense, please. You know, go ask someone. There's so many forums out there.
I can't understand people that want to, like, so their solution to get rid of the worm or the bug is to use pesticides and kill. Like, even I was reading about this organic pesticide that they call dipple dust that people put on cabbages. And And then when I, one, read about how it destroys the caterpillar by, like, eating out its insides, which just made me so sad to begin with, I thought, well, I'll take the worm in my caterpillar. But I thought, really, do I want to eat food that, so then I've killed, I've, like, sprayed some chemical or pesticide on it to kill the bug, and then I'm going to eat that food? Like, I just don't believe you can wash that off. I still always wonder, why don't we have sinks in our grocery stores? Because how many people want to eat the fruit and vegetables on the way home? Or, you know, your kids are in the car and they want to eat the grapes. Or I'm notorious for, like, wanting to get an apple or a pear at lunch. And
I'm the same way.
I don't
want to
bring it with me because it's going to get banged up or maybe I don't know.
And we know that apples are, like, the most sprayed fruit. So as organic as an apple is, it's going to be sprayed more than almost any other fruit. And the skin of an apple is very thin. So it's, you know, with organics, you know, and this is what I think I said this to Marabou. It's like, I love organics and I hate organics. I feel like it's a double-edged sword. It's if you have a good organic farmer he's not even certified organic, but he's growing better than organic. To me, that's a better food than an organic farmer who's spraying everything on the list of 200 sprays he can use, you know, or she can use, on their farm. So it's
a matter
of how. My
husband says that all the time. He's like, these big companies that are saying they're organic, he's like, they're just getting away with that. I don't think that they're really, that some of these giant companies like Dole saying that they have an organic version of a banana. It's chemistry, right?
I mean, it's kind of chemistry. If you mix it up correctly, you could come up with something kind of scary. And, you know, if you're not going to be, you know, if you're looking at your bottom dollar, you know, and you're scared you're going to lose your crop, you kind of, you know, you're between a rock and a hard place. And I can kind of understand that. And that's really not what we want. And I think with sustainability experts and professionals and all that, we can kind of all agree that, you know, yellow jackets, they lay their eggs on those poor little caterpillars. And those eggs, when they hatch, those little wasps eat that caterpillar.
Oh.
It's a beneficial insect. Yeah. Uh-huh. And you can see those caterpillars with the little eggs hanging off of them that are eventually going to kill it. Oh. So if you give it a little bit of time, if you give nature time, things balances itself out. Nature balances itself out quite well without our intervention, I believe. And I'm always amazed at how much it will do and forgive us. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, you know, that book, the ever giving tree or the giving tree, Shel Silverstein. I feel like that tree is like Mother Earth. It just keeps giving and we just keep taking. And we just keep taking. And pretty soon we have to start getting back.
You know, that's been a big theme of a lot of the guests on my show. Like with majority of the guests on my show have said that same thing. It's about replenishing your soil. It's about giving back to Mother Earth. It's about giving back to our planet.
Yeah, it is. You know, we've taken a lot out of her. And it's... I'm not saying that we're big enough of a species or we're bold enough of a species to destroy the earth, but I think we are enough to destroy ourselves. And if we're not careful about where we live, you know, there's an old saying, you know, you don't mess with where you eat. Well, guess what? We eat off the earth. Are we messing with it? What are we doing?
Well, I think that the big problem is that it's not necessarily going to destroy the earth completely, but it's going to change the earth that we're living on right now, and our seasons are going to change. And the people who are going to suffer the most, that are going to suffer the worst, are the poorest people that live in some of the toughest climates. And they're the, like,
And we already see that. And, you know, what's really, really fantastic about aquaponics is there are so many aquaponic farmers that are starting up overseas. And they realize that this is a fantastic, fantastic way to grow food for people. And I see it all the time. And I think that this is really a small part. Not all of it. There's so many parts to this picture. I mean, you know, there's never any one solution. But I think this is a really good and important solution to the big picture of things. And it's going to help us in bringing back whatever area we live in. You know, the aquaponic farmers will bring back the soil, you know, when we have, you know, nitrate hikes, we do have to sometimes take the water out of our system. And that water is good water. It's not chemical laden, disgusting water. It's got good microzoa. It'll bring the soil back. So, you know, even when we're putting out water out of our systems, it's really a positive thing. It's never a negative thing. You know, it's basically fish emulsion that we buy so expensively in the grocery stores, you know? So yeah, it's giving back.
The other thing I wanted you to talk a little bit about is your community oriented piece. Like I heard you were talking about that you would only help customers build systems within 25 miles of your home so that you could help them.
Of course.
And your neighborhood.
Yeah,
and
we don't, you know what? I don't like the idea of people building units and then just shoving them out there and then saying, here you go, figure it out for yourself. Mm-hmm. Most people don't do that. And you know, most of the people I've met with in this community, if you call them, they will call you back. I mean, all of them, they will like take a personal interest in what their product is doing. And it's, to me so far, it's been a very genuine community of people who care about the environment. And to me, it's been the most rewarding experience of my life to meet people in this community of aquaponics. They're the kindest. They're very environmentally friendly. They might not always agree in the best practices or methods, but they all share a common goal, and that is that they're very environmentally conscious. And that, to me, is amazing. That there's so many people around the world who practice aquaponics, who have aquaponics farms, who are really, they are scientists, and they're commercial or they're backyard farmers, but they're all environmentalists.
Yeah. You know, my show's been kind of like that. Like, I've learned about all sorts of things I didn't know about. Like, I never even really knew anything about permaculture until I started this podcast 3 months ago now. And then I've had tons of people on. I've had people talk about, you know, the no-till method and, you know, just now we're talking about aquaponics, and there have just been all sorts of different, methods even within the Organic Gardener, you know, the different gardeners that I've been interviewing. So
yeah.
But I think, like you said, the ultimate thread is that everybody cares about the environment and cares about the planet.
And if you just give a little bit back, you know, like I'll give an example. If you do something, I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's called lasagna composting. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you know, I don't know. A lot of people
don't realize
this.
But go ahead, because the audience,
Yeah, so basically, if you take a section of soil and you lay down some cardboard, and of course you can't do this in a large organic farm, but if you're a small backyard gardener and you want to grow things, this is a great way to grow things without weeds. You would put down, you know, cardboard and then put, you know, some compost over that and then put more cardboard and compost over that, and you build a lasagna layer, and in about 6 months it'll be mulched down, and that's good for almost 20 years. Wow. You wouldn't have to add anything to it. You wouldn't have to compost it. You just have to water it. And that's really good, you know. Straw bale, you know, farming, you know, is another
that's
great method for
like
backyard.
Crazy too. I feel like I hear people talking about that more and more all the time.
Yeah, you know. I mean, so, you know, there's
basic... Well, and it
makes
sense, and people are seeing big successes with it.
I mean, it's just composting, you know, and we compost, we compost red wrigglers, and we compost our scraps of food. We compost our meats. You know, we do a lot of things, and we don't have, you know, the one thing that's really funny is we have a recycle bin, we have a compost bin, and we have a garbage bin. And what's really funny to me is how much or how little garbage, compost, and recyclables we really have.
Oh, really?
Because we do our own, you know? We compost our own stuff.
Our biggest thing is recyclables. And it drives me crazy because we have to haul our garbage, and I want the recycling containers at the green boxes because I go through like 4 bags of recyclables a week or every 2 weeks, and we go through like 1 bag of garbage a month. And the garbage bins are right near my house, but the recycling thing, I have to go all the way to town, and so I get frustrated.
So they don't provide recycling in your town?
No. And then we live in the woods. So, I mean, even just to go to the regular green boxes is like a 2-3 mile drive, probably the closest green box. But to go to town is like 10 miles.
That's another thing I'm realizing also is, you know, going to different parts of the country and traveling. I'm realizing that recycling is not as big as it is here.
You know, and there's where law that you have to recycle in Montana at all. As a matter of fact, the only glass we have that gets recycled is Target. Target recycles glass for free, and that's it. You cannot take glass to a recycling center.
Yeah, well, you know, that recycling stuff,
public service.
It ends up in landmines, and it lands up in our oceans, and it's really a bad thing. And so, you know, a lot of cities and counties and municipalities and lots of places provide bins for us. In San Francisco and in the Bay Area, they're very green about that.
Right.
We are provided recycling bins that are huge on rollers.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's huge, and they make money off of it. So, you know, going green is kind of smart for the city because it provides them with a revenue to, you know, subsidize water and subsidize our electricity.
From the recycled material, from the recyclables they collect?
Yes, they collect everything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so with our composting, you know, and so sometimes when my composting is full and my chicken poop, I have leftover chicken poop, it goes into the compost, goes to the city composts it, and then they sell it back to its public.
Nice. So they collect compost in the two?
Yes. So excellent. We have three bins. One goes to it says landfill. Uh-huh. One says recycle. And one says compost.
Wow,
and they're different colors, and it tells you basically, you know, so
what
recycle is blue. Yeah, so recycling is blue, and those are all your bottles and cardboard and plastics. And then the green one is for the compostable, so that's your lawn clippings or your branches or, you know, all of that. And then the black one is it tells you it's your landfill. This is what you're taking to the landfill. Oh. And I'm pretty sure that we're not proud when they're full. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, all of us here, we're pretty green. We try not to, you know, we recycle everything. We really do. We'll save our jars for when we're washing dishes, and we'll save our waters from the bathtubs and bathrooms. We water our plants with it. It's called gray water. We, you know, have a huge gray water system being set up now. The County of Santa Clara gives a rebate program for putting in a gray water system into your house. California's serious about the drought.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have other states that have been living like this forever. Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. There's been a lot of places that have had droughts. And so it's not like California is the only place. The only thing that's making the difference is we do produce a lot of food. And so it's making a lot of waves. You know, it's kind of funny that, you know, in reading a lot of doing my research on water, you know, there's a lot of different attitudes about it. You know, some people are like, well, California, you know, who gives a crap about them? And then there's a lot of people who are saying, no, we need them, you know, but, you know, whatever happens in the United States happens to all of the United States. It's
right.
This no longer means what happens in California stays in California. What happens in California, it creates a wave. It means all of the U.S. is affected. It means globally we're affected. You know, we provide wheat out of Nebraska for Egypt. You know, wars have been fought over this wheat because we had crop damage due to flooding.
Right.
You know, it's amazing now that we're a global economy and there's so many bad things happening from it that I feel like we have to go back to grassroots again. To be a little bit more food secure. And I'd rather have my food grown nearby where I can go
Absolutely.
And get it
mm-hmm.
rather than sit here and worry about what's happening on the other side of the world and to see if I'm going to get my next meal.
So, you know what? I should ask you about the trout because that interested me because we have, you know, trout in Montana.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, yeah, let's talk about trout. Yeah, well, our trout are, we found out that trout are like greyhounds. They like to swim, and they like to swim very fast.
Uh-huh. Because that's what I'm wondering, like, and then what would we do about in the winter? Like, I guess it would have to be indoors.
We're in California, and water, our water, because it's recirculating, because it's constantly flowing, doesn't freeze.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good point. So then.
So, you know, they're always, it's always being pumped. And so really the coldest it could probably get, I don't know how cold it can get, but rainbow trout can live pretty cold waters. They just grow slower and eat less. We also keep koi and goldfish, which can survive freezing. The only fish that we have that probably couldn't survive cold too well would be our tilapia, which are ready to be eaten. Yeah, we have quite a bit of tilapia. And they're warm water African fish. So whenever we teach aquaponics or we teach a class, the first thing I tell them is, you know, in a sustainability way, you know, the first thing you want to look for is, are there any waterways near you? And what are your native fish that's edible, you know, that you can raise that are fresh water? That might be where you want to start with. I try to tend to steer people away from things that are not sustainable, you know, but a lot of people insist on, like, you know, rainbow trout. And maybe it's sustainable in Colorado, and that's great. Rainbow trout, they love to swim. They live in raceways, basically. If you go to a trout farm that's done in a really safe environment, they live in these long trough-like raceways, and they race. So what we've had to do is we've had to create a jet current. It's kind of like one of those little mini Japanese swimming pools where you just swim in place. So they think they're swimming really fast, but they're really swimming in one place.
But they think they're going, like, up current, like in the river?
Yeah, they think they're going up current. Yeah, they think they're, like, going, oh, man, we're 50 miles an hour. They're really swimming. Being in one place. So we've had to put a jet stream in because we had to learn, okay, what do rainbow trout like? They like temperatures of 55 degrees. That's it. They don't like it colder than, they don't like it warmer than that. And they can tolerate cold, but not that much colder. They can tolerate freezing over. They can tolerate water that goes up and down very well. So because they're river fish, they're used to, you know, swimming in streams. We learned a lot about trout. And they live about 50 years and can grow up to about 200 pounds.
Now, it what can't are the beds like pounds that you keep the trout in? Are they still those, like, ones you were describing before?
Yeah. Right now they're in a circular trough. I believe it's a 200 gallon tank, and there's not very many of them. We've been eating them. They're delicious. and then one jumped out and our dogs got to it, and then the rest of it we gave to the chickens, and some we kind of buried into the peach tree. They're really big. They stopped growing over the winter for a while, and then they started accelerating and eating a lot more. They're probably about 3 feet long now and about 4 pounds each. So yeah, we're getting ready to have a trout fest and a tilapia fest, actually. I think we have about 8 tilapia ready to be harvested. So we're gonna do that, and then we have our koi, which we don't eat. Some people do eat them in Japan. I like my trout. I like my koi. Sorry, they're butterfly koi. They're really pretty. So we have them in a pond, and we started a project where we're gonna do some vertical farming just to play with it.
All right. Well, I'm gonna kind of tie this up, and just the one final question I usually ask listeners is, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would that be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or a project you would like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either in your local area or nationally on a global scale? And I know you've been talking about aquaponics, and if that's what you want to say, but just, you know, whatever you want to say.
I think we need to plan the world a little bit better. I think our leaders need to start thinking seriously about population and what the population is going to need and what resources and how we're going to get those resources. And I think they need to kind of get real about it and stop.
And work together.
Yeah, you know, and just kind of get everyone together and agree, even if they disagree, you know, to a system of, okay, this is how many people we have. This is how much each person needs to be fed in order for them not to starve. And this is how many trees we're going to need for each person to build a home. And we need to start thinking about these things on a more critical and serious basis. We can't think that we can go on forever like this. Mm-hmm. Because we can't. It's not going to happen. We're going to crash. And so whether or not we crash hard or we land softly is going to be up to whether or not we plan for this. And I hope we're planning correctly. I feel like, you know, I'm doing my small part in it, and I'd like to see more of that. And I know that counties and cities and governments are trying, and I've seen it. But I would like to see more of it. I want to see recycling bins everywhere. I don't want to see you having to drive it somewhere or heft your recycling. It should be a part of the program.
The fact that all I have to do is go to Eureka isn't so bad. I mean, but then the worst part is then they haul it from Eureka 80 miles to another landfill.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't even go to our, like, we don't have a landfill in Eureka.
It should just come right back. You know, if it's your recyclables, you should be able to process that and be able to make money off of that through another company. There are so many third-party companies that are ready to take your recyclables. So, you know, I mean, there's so many things that need to be done. We're getting there. It's just going to take us a little bit of time, you know. And I believe in that. I believe in us. I mean, we have a great ability to pull together when things get tough. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, things have to get tough. And when it does, we'll pull together and we'll get it done. But I would like to see more recycling. I would like to see things done on more of a government-loaded scale. I want them to be able to say, hey, you know what? The U.S. government says that we're all going to recycle. Mm-hmm. Yep. This stuff's not going to our oceans. We're going to reuse and reuse. Mm-hmm. We no longer get free shopping bags at the grocery stores. We have to. We must pay for them.
Nice.
You know, things like that. You know, that's a smart move. You know, we have to do this.
Yeah.
And it should be done all across the United States. And it should be done globally, really.
Yes. How about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt or water and start their own?
Okay. Garden? How about this one? You know, there are going to be low times, but those low times means that there are going to be good times ahead. And that's what life is. Life is all about good times and bad times. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have to take your licks, get up and keep on going.
Yep, can't have a rainbow without the rain.
Yeah, that's. Oh, I wish I. We need the rain.
Yeah, we'll send you
some. Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks, Liz. Tell everybody how to get a hold of you or to connect with you if they want to.
Absolutely,
learn
more. You can visit us. Please visit our website. We're at www.genesisclockfarm.com, and give us a call for anything, anytime, and we're here all the time. Thank you.
Aw, thanks so much, Liz.
Okay. Thank you.
How would you like to win a copy of one of my all-time favorite gardening books, Rodale's An Ultimate Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening? If you enter our 2015 Gardening Challenge by going to our website at awesomemontana.com and clicking on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener podcast, right on top, there's a link to the Gardening Challenge where you can fill out a simple form. It just asks your name, the number of people in your household, what vegetable, fruit, or flower you're choosing, how much you plan to grow, and where you live. You can always email me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. There's no spaces, all lowercase, organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. And just send me the information there too. Our goal is to help listeners be inspired to grow enough produce to feed your household for a year, or at least, you know, supplement your produce bill a little. So since our first challenge this year, we're just encouraging you to pick one fruit, a vegetable, or a flower, just one, that you would like to grow enough of for your household for 2 to 3 months, like for a season. Since it's a little late, we thought just, you know, 2 months. If you pick lettuce, you might, you know, it always depends. So something that you want to grow 2 or 3 months worth, you know, kind of figure out how much would you buy if you went to the store. Would you buy a 2-pound bag of carrots every week, or would you buy, you know, a 10-pound bag of potatoes every couple of weeks? Or, you know, if you're picking flowers, you might think about, you know, a bouquet. You know, what do you want? Like enough carrots to feed you and your kids, or enough salad to have to eat every day for the month of July, or, you know, enough zinnias to have a fresh bouquet or two on your table each week? You know, whatever it is that you'd like to grow for a season, let us know and you'll be entered to win a copy of Rodale's Ultimate Encyclopedia of Gardening. And then I just want to encourage you, if there's anything we can do to help make your garden journey easier, more successful, if you have any questions, if you just want to share your challenges or successes, we would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback for the show, somebody, a guest you'd like to hear from, or a topic you want to learn more about, you know, please, you know, let me know. Any honest suggestions that we can implement are always appreciated. Just, you know, let us know. Who are you? How do you like the show? You know, what can we do? We'd love to hear from you. Again, you can always email me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com, or just reach out to the contact form on the website. Thank you so much for listening to the Organic Garden Podcast today. Remember to grow.